Of all the boys I've known, and I've known some, first met you with lonesome. Came inside of my heart, grew like the world was new to me. You're swell, I'll admit you deserve.
Welcome to a Neon Jazz interview with Miss Elizabeth of the New York-based outfit known as the Hot Sardines. Billed as a group with a blustery brass lineup, layered with the rhythm section led by a stride piano virtuoso and that Fats Waller vein, tied together with the one of the boys, front woman with a voice from another era. They have stormed New York for years, and now they are taking that gig on the road to places like Kansas City. Playing to sold-out shows all over America, they are a group of cats that pay homage to yesterday and today with their big sound and impressive stage act. The Hot Sardines are an impressive force in modern jazz today and should heartily be consumed by all who really love jazz. Over the course of an action-packed interview with Miss Elizabeth, we get a good idea of who the Sardines are, where they have been, and exactly where they may or may not be going in the future. Dig this interview, my friends.
Hey, first of all, thank you very much for taking a little time out to speak with us. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for your interest in the band.
So let's get right into it. Talk to me about the upcoming dates and just this tour that's selling out all over the place. What's going on?
Well, this is our first U.S. tour. We started out in October with the little tour legs we've been doing, and by the end of 2016, we'll have hit, I think, something like 60 or 70 cities in the U.S., and it's been really, really fun. It's been so much fun. We were just in Omaha last night. And that was sold out, and you know, we've never been to any of these towns before, so it's exciting to see I think it's a combination of just word of mouth. You know, we've been playing in New York City for a while and getting some good response there, and then you know, you don't get too much opportunity to hear early jazz played live, and so I think that people are digging it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. When you went into this, were you guys thinking, man, it would be cool to sell out, or were you going in with a blank slate? Because right now, you know, you get on your website and it's like, boom, big red, sold out, sold out, sold out. Is this a surprise, or what's going on with
that? I can't oversell how much of a surprise it is, because honestly, Bibbs Palazzo, Evan, we call him Bibbs. When he and I met, we didn't even set out to start a band, much less one that would eventually go on tour. We just wanted to play the music that we loved. Neither of us was a professional musician, and we just wanted to hang out and kind of geek out over old Louis Armstrong and Fats Waller songs. And we did that, and it's been every step of this ride has been a complete surprise to us.
So the real subtext here is that the Hot Sardines is really a love story.
I mean, it's a love story about our love for jazz. Yeah, it really is. That's a good way to put it. I'm going to remember that.
So you had your beginnings. You didn't want to start this as a band. It was more of kind of loving the jazz. But at this point, right
yeah.
now. You're a blustery brass lineup layered with the rhythm section, stride piano virtuoso in the Fats Waller vein, tied together by the front woman with a voice from another era. Tell me how you got to that point of description.
well, we met at an open jazz jam that had been advertised on Craigslist. And it was in this little rehearsal studio in near Times Square in Manhattan, and with a bunch of people there, and I kind of screwed up my courage to go there at all. I was at, you know, my company's holiday party nearby, and I had read about this jazz jam, and I thought this could be really fun. So I had placed an ad on Craigslist myself just to find people who might be into this, And Evan as well just went to this jam and we played, we all played a bunch of songs together, all these guys, and then I kind of sought him out at the end of the session because I really loved his piano playing. He has this wonderful, he's such an old soul piano player. He's fantastically talented and plays stride piano, but just has a great sensibility. And I went over to him and I said, "Do you know Fats Waller's song Feet's Too Big?" And he just started playing it. And we quickly realized we had a lot of shared references in terms of the music we love. I went home that night and I told my boyfriend, I said, I think I found someone I can kind of like do this, you know, hobby, this music hobby with. And he was like, great. And really no one thought more about it. We started hanging out. We started, you know, arranging little tunes, just the two of us. And then there was a pivot point when we wanted to give ourselves kind of a deadline. We went to an open mic. We had some songs. And that day, a friend of Evan's sent over a tap dancer. He was like, oh, this kid, you know, he's got great sensibility for this music you guys love, and you never know. And so Eddie Francisco came over to Evan's house and tapped a little bit over what we did, and we said, I guess we now have a tap dancer to go to this open mic with. Go to the open mic. Eddie tapped. He would later become Fast Eddie Francisco, who's now our tap dancer, who joins us every night on stage. And then from there, we just started, like, finding little opportunities to play. We found Jason Prover, our wonderful trumpet player. We found he introduced us to a couple of other musicians. And we turned around at one point, and we had a band. And I really can't stress enough that we never really expected to do anything with it. But it was just so much, it was so addictively fun. Just so much fun to get to bring these songs to life, that were in our heads, you know, these arrangements in our heads, and to hear this kind of early sound, that we love live. It was really, really fun.
So you've taken a music hobby and turned the Play-Doh of jazz and mashed it up into this, what you guys call a little glamour, a little grit, a lot of passion. You're weaving together kind of your own blend on an old way of jazz doing its thing. Is that kind of what you were going for? Was kind of a resurgence of the past meeting, you know, 2015? Was that kind of your mindset going into this?
I mean, I think that we never really set out to say, okay, let's be modern, but with an old world sensibility. I think that's just how we think, is that, we love this music, but we are playing it in 2015. And so inevitably we have all the music that's come between, the 1920s and now. And it's almost impossible to play something without letting a reference sneak in there. You know, we could be playing a tune from the 30s and there may be a little Ray Charles lick that slips in there from Evan on the piano, even though Ray Charles, you know, wasn't making that music that we're referencing until, you know, 20 or 30 years after that. So I think that it's just that we play it the way we want to hear it. We're not trying to recreate it exactly the way it was. We're trying to do with it what moves us, I guess.
And, you know, I've listened to the album. It's wonderful music, and I'm thinking there's a lot of audiences out there that will never hear this kind of music or would never have heard it if you didn't come and take your spin on it. Do you ever think about that when you go on stage, that this is the first time they're going to get baptized and that kind of sound?
I love that idea of a baptism by jazz.
Yeah.
If what you're referring to is that they probably wouldn't get to hear it live, I think you're right about that. I mean, that's one of the reasons why when Evan and I met, we were excited to play together, because it was hard to find and hear this music played live.
Yeah.
And it's really engaging, wonderful, soul-stirring music live, this music. I mean, it's, you know, it's very welcoming, this jazz. It's like it reaches for your heart and it reaches for your soul, and it's very visceral. I think that's one of the most fun things, is being able to share that with an audience.
Well, I think that's the reason why we have jazz legends that are still alive today. They were stirred the same way, and they were like, man, I can see Miles or Monk or someone like that on stage, and I can do that. And then later on, they're, you know, impersonating them in a movie or doing whatever, and they've had a 50-year career. Yeah, it's how it works. It's
right,
in the soup.
Right,
so,
right.
So I want this interview to be about the Sardines, but since we're talking, I want to kind of ask about you. You have a very interesting bio, a very geographically rich bio that you brought into this life and this band. Talk to me a little bit about you and where you started out and how you are where you're at today.
Well, I'm a bit of a mutt. I was born in France to a French dad and a Canadian mom. And we just moved around a lot. And eventually I settled in New York City, but I wasn't a musician. I was working as a writer and an editor of travel guides. I really did kind of stumble into playing music as a career. I think that having moved around a lot and having had experiences outside of a music career are really all that stuff is useful. Everything that is life experience informs playing this music, because it's so emotion based. It's so such a personal thing, playing jazz.
Absolutely. So a lot of people that get into writing say, God, I couldn't deal with my day job. And you've kind of done the opposite of that. You were like, I can't deal with writing, so you wanted to get into music. Is that kind of true?
Well, honestly, I never set out to get into music. I had a day job, and I had just left a full-time job to be a freelance writer. And, you know, magazines are struggling and newspapers are struggling, And I wanted to find, one of the reasons I was excited about pursuing music as a hobby is to get out from behind my computer, to just get up from my desk a little bit. You know, I was working really hard and just trying to make ends meet as a writer and editor. And there came a day after we started booking more and more gigs with the band, after we kind of fleshed out the sound of the band, there came a day when I had to look at things and go, this music thing has more momentum than my so-called career. I guess I better see where this goes. And I think a lot of people have those moments these days. You know, everything's so uncertain with jobs and with you know, your financial future these days. There are no sure things anymore. And I think that I really realized that, that there are no sure things anymore. And I thought, what the hell? Give it a try.
Yeah. So have you ever finished a show and had someone come up to you and say, you know, I was really moved by New England's favorite seafood chat?
No one has done that yet. But it is pretty funny. Yeah, I wrote in my writing life, I wrote a travel guide to New England, where I traveled from Connecticut up along the coast to Maine and interviewed lobstermen and interviewed people who run seafood shacks and wrote about it. One of the most fun things I ever did is convincing a publisher to let me basically eat clam chowder and fried clams on their dime. It's a brilliant scheme.
Oh, my God. You know, as a Midwestern guy, that would be a dream job. I would just love to embark on something like that.
It was fantastic.
Thinking, in your previous life, if someone's like, man, I know her, and they're going to put the two and two together at the end of a show, and I was just curious. So you're
well,
a jazz...
Well, there's so many people these days who wear so many hats, too.
Yeah, true.
I mean, I don't know if you know some of these people, but everyone I know in New York City is doing five or six things, and because, you know, there's, like I said, there are not a lot of traditional paths anymore that are as rewarding and as stable as they used to be.
Yeah.
So it's not uncommon to find a writer, musician, you know, nanny, I don't know, freelance computer programmer or something like that. I think that's just the new age that we live in.
Yeah, without a doubt. So, you know, you're a jazz lover. Was there a musician or an album or a moment where you were like, hell yeah, this is something I want to listen to all the time?
Oh, definitely. I think if I had to pinpoint one, it would be, there's actually two, there's a couple. I got my hands on the Ella Fitzgerald Sings the Cole Porter Songbook album when I was about, I'd say 11. And it was just magic. Those arrangements and the songs of Cole Porter, who is just one of my favorite figures in popular music. Just the lyrics and the music and those arrangements on that album are just magnificent. And that was a biggie. I wore that one out. And then a couple of years earlier, I had my Fats Waller epiphany because my parents just took me to see Ain't Misbehavin', the musical. And I was riveted. I didn't know what was going on. It was just my little tiny, you know, 9-year-old brain was blown. My mom had smartly always played that kind of music around the house. She couldn't quite deal with kids' music, so she thought, you know, some of these little ditties from the 20s and 30s and 40s, or like Frank Sinatra, stuff like that, that's not going to do a kid any harm. And so that's what we were always listening to. And my dad would play everything from his references were Bach and then James Brown and like Isaac Hayes and stuff like that. So and Ray Charles. So there was a good musical soup going on at home. But those two albums stick out for me.
So let's say after a gig the Sardines have, let's just pick Kansas City. You all walk out some mystical little realm and there's a DeLorean all tricked out and you all climb in this and you don't have a year that you punch in. You have a jazz name, a name in the history of jazz, and you all have to debate this. Who do you think you all would pick to go right to their doorstep and have a talk with?
Oh, man. You know what's so funny is that we've actually had versions of this conversation before. And go to their doorstep and have a conversation, but it's as soon as they invent the time travel machine, which gig are you going to catch?
Yeah.
And boy, it's such a tough one. It's such a tough one to answer. I mean, I think any early Ray Charles gig, I would like to be there for that.
Yeah.
I think when Louis Armstrong went to Denmark, I'd love to be there for that show because what little I've seen, what little footage there is, it's just magic. I mean, an early Frank Sinatra gig when he was just, you know, when like he couldn't even find a shirt collar that fit and he's just a scrawny necked kid and all the girls are screaming. I'd love to catch one of those.
Yeah.
I'd love to go to and hear that seminal, you know, Judy Garland show at Carnegie Hall.
Yeah.
There are a lot of moments that remind me continually that I'm born in the wrong era.
I hope they make that machine then.
I fervently do. Let me know if you hear about it first.
Yeah, I will. I will. I'll try to see. You know, Tom Hanks is a guy that's always tinkering in technology. He needs to give up the typewriter app and just say, let's
right?
get the
exactly.
car. Because he already did it, the toy. He can do it. He knows how it works.
Exactly right. He and Spielberg need to get their heads together and, like, call up Richard Branson or something. And just
yeah.
Let's go.
It's like these
2015.
Yeah, these movies are cute, but, you know, they get old after you watch them over and over. Not the time machine. You're going to see a new movie every time.
That's what I want. That's what I want. I want that time machine.
That would be cool. Great Christmas gift. So what's the greatest thing about waking up every day?
What is the greatest thing about waking up every day? Well, let's see. I'll give you the literal answer and the loftier answer. The literal answer is that since we're mostly living on a tour bus right now on this Western tour that we're doing, the greatest thing about waking up every day is that someone's made coffee. That's really fun. The bigger answer is it's the corniest thing in the world, but this really is a dream come true. Being able to play music, given the opportunity to just explore one's musical passions with a group of musicians. You know, we're an 8-piece band, and one of the things that's really so rewarding is each and every one of the guys who plays with us is so unbelievably talented, and to play music that has endured. Play a lot of songs that have lasted with musicians who are at the top of their game is such a privilege. It's a real, real privilege. Then getting to do that in front of audiences and connect with people is a whole other level of privilege.
Yeah.
And to do it for a living is an almost obscene privilege.
Yeah.
You know, and we all know that nothing lasts forever, so we're just trying to enjoy the adventure.
So speaking of forever, let's say we get on the phone in 10 years and we're like, all right, what's going on with you guys? What do you want to tell me has happened that's going to make you smile?
Wow, that's a good question. What will have happened? I don't know. I think one of the things that's really benefited us so far is that we haven't, swung from vine to vine, if you will. We haven't really made any grand scale plans. We've just been seeing where things go. I mean, if you'd spoken to me, 3 years ago, I never would have suspected that we would be on a national tour, or that we'd be going on the beginnings of an international tour coming up. We have 10 days in the UK in May. I would have laughed you out of the room if you told me that we would have a record deal with Decca. We just recorded an album with Decca, and it came out in the fall in the US, and it's about to come out internationally, in the spring in France and Europe and parts of Asia. So I just don't know. I mean, I think that as long as we are still able to connect authentically with the music and make that music connect authentically with an audience, there are a lot of ways to do that.
Yeah.
Evan and I started writing material, which is really fun. We had a couple of originals that were on this album that we're promoting at the moment. And that was a wonderful challenge, to try and, you know, take a writing stab at creating something that could stand alongside these, you know, the songs from the can, these standards that everyone knows. So that was a real wonderful challenge, and we'd love to do a little more of that. I mean, I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah.
We'll see how it all shakes down.
Right on.
I said, at the moment, we're just enjoying the ride.
Yeah, right on. So is there something that's safe for radio that you can tell me about the band that no one knows about that would be surprised to be like, oh, I didn't know that about you guys?
Oh, my goodness. Is there a secret about the band that no one knows? Shoot. We're not the most secretive bunch, so you can find out pretty much anything you want to know between our Instagram feed and our Facebook feed. You know, there are a lot of great cooks on this bus. I'll give you that.
Right.
There are a lot of great cooks on this bus. Nick Myers, who plays saxophone and clarinet with us, bought a barbecue and he smoked a bunch of chickens in a parking lot last night or two nights ago.
Nice.
Just in front of the bus, you know, in sub-zero temperatures. It's good to have people like that on a tour bus with you. I think mostly we're an open book.
Right on. So final question in the brevity and the length of a tweet, define for me who the Hot Sardines are.
In the length of a tweet. Well, we, a couple of years ago, trying to answer this question, we started using the term liquor drinking music. And I think that stays pretty true to it. Or to go back to something I mentioned earlier, it's jazz, but it's jazz that doesn't want you to sit at the other end of the room, stroke your chin, and think really hard about the notes you're playing. It wants you to be right up front, the drink in your hand, having your heart or your soul or your dancing shoes moved somehow, some combination. It's jazz, but it's jazz that's designed to move you.
Great answer. That's a great way to end it. Thank you for your time. I love you guys. Have a great time here
Thank
in Kansas
you.
City. Keep on keeping on. You guys are refreshing.
Thanks so much.
Take care.
All right.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to yet another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players in New York, Kansas City, and spots all over America, giving fans all that jazz. And thanks to Miss Elizabeth of the Hot Sardines for taking a bit of time out of an extremely busy schedule to speak with us at Neon Jazz. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Dimino on the iTunes Store, or you can always visit the neonjazz.blogspot.com for all things Neon Jazz. Until next time, enjoy the music, my friends.
Kiss me, baby, from you, Mr. Shane.
Neon Jazz.